Welcome to 3GT, the podcast where three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner, discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome to 3GT. That's Three Guys Theologizing. We are glad that you're joining us. I am Scott, your co-host, together with my two friends.
Or like mine and Barry's co-host. Like, I just want to clarify, you said I'm Scott, your co-host. And I don't want to steal your thunder on this great introduction, but are you the co-host of our listeners or are you the co-host of Barry and I?
Of the listeners. I was greeting the listeners, Kyle.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Carry on. Hey, Barry, the roll.
Is there any way we can mute him?
Yeah.
I can mute myself.
I know you can mute yourself. No, we are glad you are joining us today. It has been fun. I was able to see Barry and Kyle last week at Synod. It was good to catch up with them face to face. Although I am glad that we are able to catch up now over Zoom and record this. I trust you both had a safe and uneventful trip home from Marion.
Yeah, you know, I was really thankful. The car that I was in, we had some good laughs, which after a pretty heavy synod was great recovery for all of us. It was a great trip home.
And of course, I got to see Barry this past weekend as he was at a wedding here in close to Marion. It wasn't quite in Marion, but it was good to see him and his wonderful bride again.
Yeah, I made two trips to Indiana last week, one for Synod, and I came back and went back for a wedding. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, Barry. That's tough.
That's a magnet out there.
I make one trip to Indiana a year, and that's pretty much enough for me.
And we feel like it's too much.
Yeah, I know.
But it is good to be back with you guys here. On this podcast, the last episode we did, we were talking about parishioners as they contemplate leaving a congregation, and then even pastors. You know, sometimes they feel called away from a congregation for many reasons. And we got an email from a listener, and I really appreciate this email. It says he mentions that I enjoyed the episode. If you leave me now. It covered parishioners leaving and pastors leaving. But what about ruling elders? How do we know if it is time to go? Or maybe not actually go, but resign or take a break? What if after 20 plus years, you're tired or discouraged? And I think that's a really important question. You don't often hear about ruling elders leaving a congregation or resigning or taking a break or stepping away. And I'm a ruling elder. I have no desires to leave or stop being a ruling elder to move. But, you know, this question has come up. How do you know as a ruling elder if it's the right time to leave or if you should leave? And, you know, there are some congregations, and I think we'll probably talk about this, where, you know, ruling elders are on a 3-year term and then they're off for a time. So that's what I'd like to talk about today is ruling elders, you know, the need to leave sometimes or take a break or how they know. So I just want to open it up with that and maybe explain from your experience how long ruling elders stay in that position.
Scott, if I might...
Go ahead, Barry.
Go ahead, Barry.
Okay. Well, I thought I might just take a little bit of a step back because I would assume many of our listeners know what we're talking about when we talk about a ruling elder, but I don't think we should take that for granted as we do attract a wide range of listeners. We all know that, but or at least we can imagine that we do.
A wide range of listeners. Yes.
And multiple continents, right?
Yes. I mean,
we have gotten emails from Europe, so we appreciate our European listeners.
Yes. So I think it just very quickly, you know, when we're talking about a ruling elder, we understand that God has set apart pastors to do the ministry of teaching and preaching in a congregation, but in a Presbyterian form of government, and the very word presbyter means elder, we believe that there needs to be more than one man overseeing or shepherding a congregation. And so the idea of a ruling elder, I think, as we see, particularly in the Reformation era, Martin Bucer in his Concerning the True Care of Souls really develops that functionality of a ruling elder when he talks about how, because of the variation of the body of Christ, one man, particularly just a pastor, can't take care of it by himself. And so he talks about God raising up, and we see this in the scriptures, God raising up from the midst of the people, those that are seen to have certain qualities of character and leadership that they can help shepherd the congregation alongside the pastor. And so we call that in our system a ruling elder. And in our circles, when a man is ordained into that office and installed in a congregation, he often stays there, and there's no end to his office unless he were to request that, or if he were to move out of that local congregation to another site, then he would automatically end his service as a ruling elder in that particular congregation, and would not be, if he starts attending another church, automatically assumed to be a ruling elder in that one. So just a brief overview.
Yeah, and that's where I was originally going to go too, but I yielded to age.
Yielded the floor to the elder.
Before beauty, I yielded the floor to the older one. and I almost called a point of order, because we heard so many of those last week at our synod meeting that I just thought it would be appropriate. But just, you know, a moment of shameless self-promotion. We did kind of cover a distinction between teaching and ruling elders in episode 211. And so to all of our faithful listeners, if you want to jump back to that to hear a little more, but I think that's a really important distinction to make. And make sure that we are all on the same page. And Scott, maybe before, and I value your question, and I don't mean, Barry and I are not trying to commandeer the chairman's spot today as you ask us the questions. But one of the things that I would note is, you know, before we ask the question, when might a ruling elder think of discontinuing his service or moving on? I think it's really important to emphasize the true blessing that ruling elders are. You know, as Presbyterians, you know, Presbyterian means we are elder-led. Functionally and practically, sometimes that can kind of translate into pastor-led, as though teaching elders are the ones that kind of call the shots and run the show. But biblically speaking, and according to true Presbyterianism, that's not the case at all. We need ruling elders in the church. You know, Barry is a president of a seminary, and just last week gave a very impassioned plea to our denomination for how desperately we need pastors in our pulpit. But I also think equally that the desperate plea needs to go out and be sounded again and again that we need good ruling elders in our churches. For as many empty pulpits as there are, you know, it's easy. It doesn't take long for local churches to flounder for lack of gifted and good ruling elders. Ruling elders are such a blessing to the church, purposed by Jesus to serve in that capacity. Ruling elders, sometimes unlike teaching elders, bring a very practical knowledge to the government and the fellowship of the church. Pastors forge so much of what we think in the ivory towers of seminary, you know, and we're thankful for internship opportunities, things like that. But ruling elders really, in a very real sense, have their boots on the ground of ordinary daily life in a way that sometimes pastors don't. They get practicality. They understand. They have functional know-how. And so I think before we kind of get into that question, I just want to emphasize what a blessing good ruling elders are. And if we have ruling elders listening to this episode, to just be very clear that we thank you for your service. Churches are what they are, not because simply of pastors, but because gifted ruling elders are giving their lives for the sake of the sheep of Jesus Christ. And so we can't minimize the place of a ruling elder. And I just want to begin by noting that.
And I pray. Go ahead, Barry.
Oh, I was just going to say, Scott, just two clarifications. One, I did partially answer your question because I did talk about our expectation of how long a ruling elder would serve. Sure. So I just want to make that clear. And then secondly, I am older, so I often forget past episodes.
That's we've covered that issue as well in past episodes.
Oh, okay.
We have. Do you not remember that was episodes?
I don't remember what episode, but we have discussed that. Both your age and your forgetting previous episodes. Now, Kyle, first of all, I want to thank you for those words. As a ruling elder, it's good to hear that we are appreciated. It's kind of an interesting place to be because most of the time people want to seek counsel and wisdom from the pastors, which is fine. There's a lot of blessing and wisdom in that. But, you know, I like to remind people that we're here too, and you can abuse us just as much as you abuse the pastor. And we're happy to take that abuse.
So even more abuse the ruling elders. That's really what it comes down to.
Well, but in all fairness, there are times, as we discussed in our last episode, that pastors can get burnt out from the ministry. And I'm wondering if you have ever seen it in your ministries, not necessarily Barry as a ruling elder now. You are the hybrid, as I think you have described yourself previously. But have you seen in your ministries where perhaps a ruling elder has gotten to that point where they just need to step back?
Yes, I definitely have. Some men just note that they need to take a break, and it can be because of personal reasons, family reasons, and they just want to take a leave of absence. In the church I serve currently, there's been an encouragement for ruling elders to consider a sabbatical time, perhaps rotating not permanently off the session, but just taking a time away. And I know other congregations have done that. So it's a little bit more preventative rather than curative. They don't want guys to get burned out, so they try to encourage them to take some time away from it. So I definitely have seen that.
I haven't. Of course, July 1st will mark my 8th anniversary of becoming the pastor here in Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church. I'm thankful that among my ruling elders, at least one of them has been an elder longer than I've been alive at 38 years. And a couple of the other ones, probably when I was still in elementary school, were ordained and installed here in our congregation as ruling elders. And they have served very faithfully through those decades. And we have not experienced, we have had an elder that needs to recuse himself for a time due to health concerns. He was battling cancer, and that's totally, mm-hmm. totally understandable with chemotherapy and things like that to take a break and to step back. But beyond that, I have not yet experienced a ruling elder who has either felt the need to step away or has even been forced to.
One of the things, Scott, that I think about when it comes to ruling elders that is somewhat contained in Kyle's comments is I really see ruling elders as rocks. You know, they're the anchors of the church. They're going to be there through thick and thin, through this pastor or the next one often. And so there is some sense where a ruling elder is bringing stability. I mean, I think it's part of their calling to bring that stability into the life of the church. And so some of what Kyle's explaining is the good side of a long-serving ruling elder. I think what we want to talk about is a little bit more, given the nature of the question of our listener, is when, though, in this process of being a ruling elder, might there need to be some type of change? Right.
So I wanted to go back to something Kyle had mentioned, and that's the stability and the solid rock that ruling elders have been. You know, I've been in an RP church for, it's going on, I believe it or not, about 24 years, 23 years. And all that time, I've had the same ruling elders save two. And both godly men. The first one was Paul Ferris. When I joined the church, he was a ruling elder. I remember him hugging me and my fiance at the time as we joined the church. A godly man, great man, nearing the end of his life, as we would soon learn, but he gave up so much of his time to the ministry of the church, and I really appreciated him and the stability he brought. And then the other ruling elder was a dear friend. I was elected as a ruling elder with him, Joe Marsis, who, because of health concerns, had to resign. But every other ruling elder I've had is still a ruling elder besides those two. And I really appreciated those two men, but I've just seen the wisdom in having this solid foundation in the churches that I've belonged to as ruling elders. So I can see what Barry's saying, mm-hmm. that there's a lot of good things that come out of the long-term ruling elder.
And that rock solid foundation, as we're talking about, as Barry pointed out, you know, we believe that is developed from the theology of the Bible. We understand that when a man is ordained and set apart to the eldership, that the Lord does not revoke his calling, and that is a permanent status, barring, you know, and this is part of the rock solid character that's reflected in our, even in our standards, barring their willing resignation from that office or discipline, they're in. I mean, there's no real process for the church to be like, you know, we don't really like him, or even for the session to say, well, he's kind of become a naysayer. We're gonna move him to the side. We no longer want him to serve. We understand that the ordination and the installation to the office of elder, that barring censure, barring church discipline and their willing resignation, they serve in that capacity for as long as they want, which puts a gravity and a seriousness to those that we elect as elders, as ruling elders in the church. And I would even say some of that stability is not always present with pastors. Congregations can actually petition a presbytery and say, we think this pastor's kind of outserved his longevity here. Let's encourage him to move along. And presbytery can weigh that and actually sever the relationship, whether the pastor wants it severed or not. And that is not as true with regard to our ruling elders. And so I think, you know, obviously we're not talking about issues of discipline here. And when do we, for disciplinary purposes, remove a ruling elder? The question becomes, and if I understand it, the question from our listener is, you know, how can a ruling elder think about whether or not it's time to resign, whether or not it's time to step back? And maybe before giving some positive answers, one thing that I want to say is what I don't think is always a good reason. I have been in situations or counseled or talked to men who were ruling elders in churches who had a pretty heated disagreement within the session. You know, and that happens when you have a plurality and a parity of eldership. It's one of the glories of Presbyterianism. We don't always agree with one another, and we are free to disagree, and we are free to disagree very strongly with one another. And sometimes we're not so trained in how to disagree in Christian unity. You know, sometimes we think that that disagreement automatically undermines unity. And it doesn't, because biblically speaking, on this side of heaven, unity is not uniformity. And we need to remember that. And I've talked to ruling elders who have been very discouraged. You know, I felt really strongly about topic A, and I wanted to go in an XYZ direction, but the rest of the session decided to go in an ABC direction. I'm just going to throw the towel in. You know, depending on the severity of that, I mean, if you're conscience bound and you think that there's sin going on there, then I would encourage the elder to pursue the avenues that are open to every member and office bearer in like a context like ours, to pursue that in the courts of the church. But where I would say is, let's put the brakes on and not see that as an automatic reason that I just need to be done. You know, I can't get on board with the agenda, or I can't see things their way, and clearly I'm not, you know, I've heard that attitude expressed. And I think it's really important for ruling elders to understand that, well, it's just important for everybody that governs in the church. We're not looking for yes men. You know, we don't want to just be rubber stamping what the majority says. Elders in the plurality and parity of the eldership, you're allowed to disagree, and you're allowed to disagree strongly. And that's not a bad thing. Sometimes we act like it's a bad thing, and it's not. I think the times I've been most blessed by my elders is when they've said, thanks, Kyle, but no thanks. We disagree with you on this one. Yeah, it hurts the ego a little bit for a guy with somewhat thin skin. It's not always easy to hear. But at the end of the day, that's the way the church functions. And that's a good thing. And so I think before we talk about maybe some of the valid reasons, I would say that disagreeing with a decision or even a direction of the rest of the elders is not of itself automatically a reason to give up in despair and discouragement and just say, it's time for me to back off.
And I appreciate that. You know, disagreeing is hard, and it's hard on both parties, but it's so necessary oftentimes to hash those things out. And because usually when there's a disagreement, there's more discussion. There is things can get worked out. And even if you're on the losing end of a disagreement or things don't go your way, I think that's very beneficial. And I agree with you, Kyle. I don't think that's a good reason for a ruling elder to just up and quit. It's like, I'm going to take my toys and go home now because I didn't get my way. And, you know, that's really not a godly response to those situations. But on the other hand, you know, not dealing with that, not dealing with the disagreements, but there can be times, I think, where a ruling elder can begin to get burnt out from his role as a ruling elder that was mentioned before. And so I guess, what are some of the signs that we can look for, that I can look for in myself, that other ruling elders can really examine themselves to see if they're beginning to go down that path of getting burnt out? And then maybe we can talk about how to address those. But what are some of the signs that you would say, well, there's a warning sign. We need to really consider that. Or Scott, you need to consider that, you know, you're starting to exhibit some of these signs.
So you want us to talk about you, Scott?
Sure. I want any opportunity Kyle has to.
Kyle and I could just like,
that opens the door wide open.
What are
open?
The signs we're really seeing here, Kyle?
Yeah.
I have thin skin too, Kyle, but you know, it's
you're
okay.
A lawyer, you don't have thin skin.
Well, I think, you know, I've touched on a few of them, but you know, the call to be a ruling elder is a call to sacrifice. And whereas a pastor, as we said before, gets paid to do this work, a ruling elder is doing it all on a volunteer basis, usually unless there's some special arrangement the church has made. And so in order to volunteer in Christ's service, you need to be able to do it in the right and proper spirit. And if there begins to come into your life personal situations, as was mentioned earlier, health concerns, family issues, that are really preventing you from serving effectively, I think that would be one sign that you might need to take a time away. Again, I know a dear friend right now who has stepped away because of those very things. He just can't, he doesn't feel like he's able to give himself fully to the work at this moment in time. And I think as other elders, as we hear these things, we need to be very quick, as difficult as it may be to lose a well-functioning member off the session. We should be really willing to listen to those things and to really help. We not only need to shepherd the congregation, but we need to be able to shepherd the shepherds. We need to be able to take care of our fellow elders in the church. So I would say if a man is feeling that, he needs to come. I would encourage him, just like we talked about, whether a pastor or a parishioner is getting ready to leave, I think a ruling elder should come and open up about that first with his fellow elders and his pastor and have some conversations about it before he goes ahead and makes the heart a decision. Oftentimes we're ruling elders, as we've just talked about, are the rocks of the congregation, and to show any kind of weakness can often seem to be a wrong thing to do. And I think we need to be able to have enough openness and transparency within the session to encourage, if you're going through a difficult time, you're going through a time of weakness, whatever that may be, that there's no shame in that. Just come and let us bear your burden in Christ.
Yeah. And I think together with that, and to expand a little bit, I think too of busyness. Like, we understand that there are seasons of life that get busier than others. You know, in our own context, in the Reformed Presbyterian Church of North America, the ordination vows for ruling elders and teaching elders are by and large very similar. There's some things added and specified for a teaching elder, but ruling elders are expected to do largely many things that pastors are as well, including shepherding the flock, keeping a close watch over them, making visitations to families, to those who are afflicted. And if a ruling elder simply finds himself too busy to be able to give himself to that, that's understandable, because ruling elders likely have another vocation, and we get that. And they have a number of activities that they are doing, And I actually think for the benefit of the session and the spiritual health of the congregation, you know, it's sad when elders get so busy that they can't keep up with the sheep. And that itself can cause collateral damage. And so instead of feigning this strength and, you know, well, I'm just going to keep going because I'm an elder, but I actually don't have time to do it. I'm way too busy. Just step back for a little while so that the whole congregation understands you're not purposely being neglected. You know, this elder is just busy at this season. The others are going to have to pick that slack up and carry that. But I think that's better done explicitly than just implicitly. And we get that there's busy seasons. You know, many ruling elders, like I said, they have other vocations. They have family. They have children. They have grandchildren. They have things going on. And we hopefully have the flexibility to acknowledge that and just to let them maybe in those seasons step back for a little while.
Sure. And I guess to speak, not so much of experience, but, you know, there are times when my life is busy and I almost feel like I could fail as a ruling elder by not taking a step away or feeling guilty because I have other concerns of life that I need to deal with. And those are things that nobody has put on me. Those are things I've put on myself and demands I've put on myself. But you know, it's good to hear that, hey, I understand you're busy. You know, you need to check your availability, not reevaluate what is good and what is not, but check your availability because we have made a commitment to the Lord that we would be here to shepherd the people. And we need to be able to follow through with that.
Yeah. And with that, you know, and I don't want to get, you know, there might actually be the need to repent of busyness, you know, and to look at some of the priorities in life, because just like you said, Scott, you know, an elder has made promises to God that I will do this. And I do think there are valid times of busyness and providences that befall that say, you know, I need to step back. It might also be appropriate to reevaluate some of the priorities and figure out, you know, if you're giving yourself, because, you know, if you're just too busy because you're taking a beach vacation every weekend and you're just busy Monday through Sunday, you know, preparing for and going to your beach vacation and I don't have time to do the work of an elder, you know, you might throw a red flag up about that. But, you know, if there's issues going on at home, if there's just, like I said, those seasons of busyness, there is room there, I think.
And I appreciate the distinction you're making there, Kyle, because, you know, people judge busyness in different ways. I mean, it's usually busy is a subjective standard. I was talking to my son who's working this summer. This has been unusual for him, first year of college. Now he's working and, you know, he feels really busy and pressured and, you know, welcome to life. You know, it's busy as an adult, which is a lot.
Buttercup.
but he does it with great joy. He works hard with great joy, but I think busyness is also something that you have to, are you really busy? You know, some people think working 8 hours a day is busy, and some people can work 16 hours a day and still have time for other things. So what I'm saying is that just the pressures of life, I think, even can get to a person. So I guess that kind of answers my question, though, about the signs of burnouts. Where can a ruling elder go? What should he do when he's starting to feel these things? I know, Barry, you talked about being open with the session, but can you expand on that? I mean, what are some ways that you would recommend a ruling elder work through some of these issues?
I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that we all need seasons of revitalization, rekindling our first love. And so I think it's important as a session to be talking about this. Are our collective wells dry? I always found, you know, some of the things that we did as elders just kept me encouraged. Like we would read a book together. We'd have a significant time of devotions with one another and prayer for one another in a session meeting so that you don't feel alone. You feel like you're a team, and that team spirit really, I think, helped sustain different men through different difficult seasons of their own personal life. I think reading good books, the church investing in its elders, not to, you know, put out a commercial plug here, but I guess I will, you know, our seminary has just instituted.
Shameless. Yeah. Shameless. He can't remember previous episodes, but he sure is going to remember what the seminary does.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just
before you begin, Barry, I was actually going to ask this question. Does the seminary offer any help or training for ruling elders?
And the answer is yes, we do.
And that was not a shameless plug. I was actually going to ask that question.
Well, we've recognized that we have resources, and we basically have designated most of them only for men getting ready to enter the ministry. Why not take some of these things that we're doing and try to find ways to encourage pastors who are already out in the ministry, as well as ruling elders? And so we have designed a ruling elder program that consists of taking 5 classes over 5 years. And we've had sessions sign up for this. And the idea is they take classes that we think are well-suited for the eldership. And the men watch the lectures, maybe one lecture a month, and then they get together during their session meeting or another designated time and discuss them. There's readings that go along with that, so that they're being encouraged and being built up. I've been talking to some ruling elders recently who occasionally preach in their churches, and they're talking about having times of learning some homiletical skills so that they can put together a message. And even if you don't preach, it's good to know a little bit about that, because you should be examining your preacher and encouraging your preacher and what he's doing. So I do think ongoing education and the church being proactive to that is a very important way of keeping elders reaching that burnout stage. It's not 100% guarantee, but I do think it really helps bolster them.
You know, I want to be a little guarded, because I want to recognize that when people are entering a burnout area, whether it's a pastor or an elder, in one sense, the last thing they need is to be spread even more thin with more to-do lists. Sometimes you just need a break and you need a rest.
Yep.
But maybe one of the ways to guard against some of the burnout or to be refueled, I don't know, I'm going to throw this out there, you know, we expect our ruling elders to be engaged in the courts of the church, not only in a local session, but at a presbytery level and at a synodical level. And I know in talking to ruling elders, there are those who just value those times in the regional church to meet with other pastors, to meet with other ruling elders. And they find that as a time to be recharged and kind of, you know, here are other men who in their local context are engaged in ministry in the same way, same capacity that I am. Here's how they do it. Here's how they conduct themselves. And I know that, you know, several of my ruling elders, when they go to regional meetings like that, come back in one sense, yeah, they're exhausting, but come back kind of like, oh, you know, kind of reinvigorated for the ministry of the ruling eldership. And I think, aside from the fact that we just expect ruling elders to be part of the courts of the church and they have a very valuable voice in the decisions and things that happen, it can also be used in that regard as well, you know, to meet with other ruling elders from around the denomination and to see and to hear how things go with them and the dynamics of their life. And I think that's an important thing too. It's easy if you just focus on the local congregation to almost become an island and to forget that there are, at least in our small denomination, hundreds of other men in the same position as you are.
And that's also part of, you have to keep that balance that you just mentioned as well, because ruling elders, in order to attend these meetings, often have to give up vacation days and things like that. So that's also part of the sacrifice. And I think if we just recognize that and encourage them, that's a big part of it, just recognizing the great sacrifice many men make in order to serve in this way.
Well, you know, this past Synod, I was blessed to have it in my backyard, so to speak. So I could sleep in my own bed. I actually went to work almost every day for several hours or went after some of the meetings. So
yeah. And despite being in your backyard, you also failed to show up for some of our sessions, but go on.
Now Kyle, you know why. I told you because you asked me where I was, and I could tell you what I was doing.
You were at work. You had important things to do.
I was at work. And as a matter of fact, I do think I made a special trip once or twice to Synod.
As soon as I opened my mouth, I realized, oh no, he drove just for me to give me something that I needed. So
But I did find it rather encouraging to be there. But the last question I think is important though, and I want to get your take on it. The writer of this letter said, what if after 20 plus years, you're tired or discouraged? Is there ever a good reason to step away from being a ruling elder because you're tired or discouraged?
Well, one of the things I want to say is I think sometimes men get accustomed to that role in the church for years and even decades, and it can be very difficult to give that up. And I think we always have to be asking ourselves as we serve the church before the Lord, am I really helping, and is God really keeping me here, or is it time perhaps for me to step down so that someone else can serve in this capacity? I think it can be easy to hold on for too long and there be some type of shame and I guess what we could call retiring from the eldership. And I don't think that's necessarily age dependent, but I do think that the older we get, our abilities and all of that can decrease. Sometimes there's even rapid times of those decreasing, and we just have to really, maybe it's best for the church for me not to function in this capacity anymore and to step away in a gracious way before I get to that point where everybody's wishing I would do it, but I'm not recognizing it. So I do think we need to really hold on to our responsibilities faithfully, but always be willing to release them when the Lord wants us to do so.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I like that balance, to use the overused word of balance, but you need to recognize that the ministry, which is entrusted both to pastors and ruling elders, is a ministry given by Jesus. And it is, God does not revoke his callings. And so you need to simultaneously have this very high view that the ministry I'm doing here is at the end of the day, it's not simply at the will of the congregation or the session. It is Jesus who has entrusted the ministry to me. And so Colossians 4:17 totally comes to be applied here. You know, say to Archippus, fulfill the ministry given to you by the Lord Jesus Christ. At the same time, I think what Barry is saying is important. But before you jump to those conclusions, I think there's a tremendous amount of wisdom and discernment, and hopefully our ruling elders are wise and discerning men. You know, is your discouragement a true discouragement? Is it self-pity? You know, I know what it is to struggle with the sin of self-pity. It's horrible. And it's very easy to make judgments and decisions in wallowing in your own self-pity. And I think that those are things that need to be dealt with honestly, which is why I think it should be done in the context often of the session itself. You know, I'm feeling discouraged. Here's why I'm feeling discouraged. Help me discern this. Help me figure out what's going on here. And hopefully as iron sharpens iron, one man will sharpen another. But I think that that's really important, is because we don't hold, even as Barry said, and I agree with that, you know, in one sense, we hold on to that calling loosely if the Lord is directing in that way. At another time, we hold very tightly to the dignity and the honor of the ruling elder and of that office of eldership. And you don't want to just give that up willy-nilly because I'm having a bad day or I'm having even maybe, you want to persevere and endure if that's what Jesus is calling you to do.
But we need to, what I'm hearing is there needs to be expressed this idea that there is no shame involved. If you do not feel that the Lord is calling you to this purpose any longer, there should be no shame involved in that. Just as there is no shame in a pastor stepping away from his calling at a certain church.
Exactly. And just like a pastor who has lost all zeal and fire for being a pastor, and he just remains a pastor because I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills, that has such terrible collateral damage for a church, you know, and it shouldn't be. Well, it's the same with a ruling elder. If a ruling elder is convinced I can't serve in this, you do the church a favor then by stepping back. And there's not shame in that. That is actually a means. We promise to study for the peace, the purity, and the progress of the church. And as hard as it is to come to terms with, and one day I will probably have to come to terms with it, sometimes the progress of the church is contingent on me leaving.
It's Scott, you had mentioned our friend Joe and his health issues coming to the point where he couldn't serve any longer, he felt. And he, even as you talked about that, just the memory of him coming into my office and us sitting there talking about this and, you know, weeping together and praying about this, there was no shame.
Right.
There was no shame in what he did. And I do think there comes a point, whether it's a health issue like that or just some other reason, for a man to release, you know, in a sense, his hold on that office because he believes it's the in the best interest of the church and for himself and his family.
Well, we are unfortunately out of time. We hope that this discussion has been fruitful and helpful, especially to those ruling elders out there who may be struggling with some of these issues. We do thank you for joining us each and every week. If you are a regular or if this is your first time, we are glad that you joined us today. We look forward to hearing from you. So if you have questions, please feel free to email us at 3gt.xyz@gmail.com. You can leave a message on our Facebook page, or you can join the Apple podcast. If I'm saying that right, Kyle, I'm not an Apple guy, so I don't know.
Congratulations, Scott. You said it correctly.
Awesome. But we are glad that you joined us today, and we look forward to meeting you again here on 3GT.